This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
Lisa Roxy, KS Film, presents a film with narrative description by AudioVision Canada. Midnight Cop. An orange haze, fueled by smokestacks, hangs over an Eastern European city. A Peter Patzak film. In an old apartment building, two men sit on a couch, jamming, with their feet up on a coffee table full of liquor bottles and beer cans. Starring Armin Mueller-Stahl. Morgan Fairchild. Frank Stallone. The older man plays a trumpet, the younger man a saxophone. Julia Kent. Monica Bleibtreu. Allegra Curtis. Michael York. Later, the trumpet player slouches in an armchair, dreaming restlessly. In the dream, the sax player sits alert behind the rain-spattered windshield of a car, watching the rundown hotel. Inside, a man is on the phone.
Listen, I'll meet you at 10 o'clock. Yeah, we'll make the switch now.
Out in the hall...
Well, somebody screwed up and they're going to pay for it.
The trumpet player, a cop, exchanges nods with his partner, who puts down a service tray of coffee and hurries down the hall toward the room.
I told you not to get your cousin involved in our business. He's a pain in the ass.
Yeah, well, his habit is cutting into our profits.
You just get rid of him. The usual way, I don't care. Just do it.
At a signal from the trumpet player, the partner draws a pistol.
Look, I don't want to fucking talk about it anymore.
The trumpeter points his pistol at the door. His partner kicks it in. The man inside has a shotgun. Shotgun blast showers the trumpeter with plaster dust. The shotgun blows a hole through a wall. The next blast catches the partner in the chest. Darting into the hall, the gunman backs away, firing. Behind him, a little girl watches in horror. He hits a fire extinguisher, and a cloud of carbon dioxide fills the corridor. Stepping out, the trumpeter fires into the cloud of CO2. He hurls his empty pistol down the hall and swipes at the fog in frustration. Then he stares through the swirling CO2. At the end of the hall, the cloud begins to lift, revealing the little girl crumpled on the floor. Back in his apartment, the trumpeter jerks awake from his dream. He sits up, knocking over an end table. On the turntable, the needle runs across the record label. He turns the record player off, then walks across the living room. In the doorway to the bedroom, he stoops to pick up a fedora from the floor, then looks at his wristwatch. Glancing at the next apartment, he beats out the time with his hand. Then grins in satisfaction. Slapping a hanging lamp out of the way, he steps past a cluttered table. Placing his hat on his head, he sits at the table in his pajama bottoms. Bending down for something on the floor, he sweeps dirty dishes aside and sets a turtle on the table. With a corner of his handkerchief, he wipes the turtle's face. Then he picks up the phone.
May I please speak to my daughter?
How dare you call at this hour? She's sound asleep. If you need to talk to someone, call my lawyer.
Nearby is a black and white photo. The trumpeter, with his daughter on his shoulders and his wife at his side. Later that morning, sits in his car at a stoplight. He glances up at a construction crane. Then he drives through the intersection. The city simmers beneath the haze of the morning smog. Later, in a glass and steel building under renovation, the trumpeter hurries past co-workers, holding his stomach. As he reaches the washroom, a toilet comes flying out. He stands in the pile of broken porcelain, touching his forehead tenderly. Clutching his stomach, he gestures painfully. He leans against the wall, then sinks slowly onto an unbroken toilet bowl. A slim brunette in a black leather jacket and tight skirt, her hair piled high on her head, strides across the construction site.
The report is what you listed before.
Letting herself into an office, she sets two bottles of wine down on the desk. She opens the door to an inner office, but there's nobody there. Back at the desk, she picks up a framed photograph out of a box. It's a picture of the trumpeter's partner and his family. The trumpeter walks in.
Yes?
May I help you?
He puts the picture back in the box.
He isn't in.
Who isn't in?
The boss.
I'm the boss.
He enters the inner office.
Yeah.
Shall we have a glass together?
Why should we?
I'm your new assistant, Shirley May. I appreciate your enthusiasm. Red or white?
What do I care? I'm colorblind. Chief Inspector Conrad. Conrad, it's glass. How on earth could you do such a thing? His widow hasn't even picked up his stuff, and you put a disco queen in his place. I understand. She is good. It'd be better if she were better.
I didn't volunteer to work for you.
Why don't you go and clean this office? Hey, your office. You can do mine, you and lunch. I've got some pressing matters to take care of. Thanks.
He skips across the office, then begins to unwrap a gift box.
I look forward to our collaboration.
He lifts a stuffed bear from the box.
You call?
You can't
make so much noise in front of a rehab center.
Outside a rehab center, Glass walks across the sidewalk and approaches the wrought iron and brick fence. On the grounds, a nurse is helping the little girl he shot use a walker.
Ready, Glass? That's good. Wonderful. Okay, I'll be right back, okay?
The nurse walks over to the gate. Glass hands her the stuffed bear.
Jamona keeps asking who's sending her all these gifts.
I'll give it to her the next time myself.
Yeah, that's what you said the last time. I think you're scared.
He sees Jamona gazing at him sadly.
Yes.
Tipping his hat to the nurse, he turns away. Glass shoves a cassette into his tape player. A mugshot of the gunman from the hotel is taped to the dashboard.
Don't give us any...
Trying to back out of his parking spot, Glass lurches forward.
Hey, watch where you're going.
A young officer walks over to confront him. Glass slams his door into the man's groin.
Toilets.
Back at headquarters.
No paper.
Watch out, or your ass may be smarter than you.
Hey, what's this?
There's only one way to prove it, but...
You mean tap his phone?
Right.
All right. I'll sign the release. You cash it. Give me the form.
But
what's your problem?
The district attorney is giving you his okay. Okay?
Alex!
The district attorney is Alex Glass's friend, the saxophone player.
Can you give me a ride home?
Sure. There you go. As long as you come and have a beer with me.
You know, you're not looking well.
I'm not sleeping well.
Would you hold the door for me, please?
Ladies first. Ladies, yes, sir.
Alex steps through the doorway, leaving his friend to hold the door for Shirley. Outside, Shirley climbs the stairs.
That Polish charm.
We understand each other. She comes from the same neck of the woods.
They both crouch down to peer up her skirt. On the expressway.
Alex, relax. Look, it wasn't your fault that little girl got shot. Now stop blaming yourself, for Christ's sake. Have you been to see him meanwhile? Afraid?
Alex nods.
What about your daughter? Any news of her?
No, and don't expect any either. Her mother will see to that.
Your daughter will get in touch sooner or later.
Yeah, maybe to pick up a turtle.
The district attorney wheels his Mercedes along the road beneath the elevated railway. He cruises slowly past the prostitutes waiting in the shadows at the side of the street.
Take a look at this.
Go slower!
Kids.
Take your pick.
These are whores, Alex. Make no mistake.
That's your mistake. They are kids.
One of the girls approaches the car, but a friend pulls her back, then stares defiantly at the district attorney.
Let's save that beer for some other time. I'm a bit worn out.
All right. I'll drive you home. Anyway, I have to pick up my daughter later at the dance class.
No, Mike. I'll walk.
Michael leaves Alex at the curb. Later.
Dove il caffè?
Ecco il vino.
Dove il vino?
Ecco il vino.
Ecco il libro.
Ecco il libro.
Dove il libro francese?
Ecco il libro francese.
Ecco il libro.
Ecco il libro francese, signora.
Alex lies on his bed, the turtle on his chest.
Ascoltiamolo una volta.
He puts plugs in his ears.
Dove il libro?
Popping the tab of a can of beer, he takes a sip, then tosses the can over his shoulder.
One, two, turn, four.
At the dance studio.
Out, step, step, pull. One of the dancers, go home and practice. Get out of here.
the matter, Mom?
Yeah, but I just can't do it.
Oh, sure you can do it.
As the student heads to the change room, the instructor walks into the lobby.
Oh, Mr. Carstens, good evening. You're early. Would you like to wait for your daughter in my office?
No, I'd rather wait here if you don't mind. Thank you.
In the change room, Michael stands in the doorway, staring at one of the dancers, the defiant prostitute. She stares back. Another girl notices, and Michael smiles at her.
We're waiting outside.
Later, Michael waits by his car as the two girls come out.
Does your friend want a ride?
She's got an appointment.
There's Janet.
Bye.
Ciao. Hi, Janet.
The friend puts her dance bag on her bicycle carrier. As Michael pulls away, he nearly runs into her.
Didn't you see Inez?
I'm sorry. My thoughts were somewhere else. Would you like some music? It's not exactly easy to have a conversation with you.
Well, my thoughts are somewhere else, too.
Later, Inez leans her bike against the wall of a warehouse. In a loft inside, a man stands before a mirror, shaving with a straight razor. Inez hurries up the stairs. Startled by the buzzer, the man cuts his cheek. Wearing only a towel around his waist, he unlocks the door. He smiles at the sight of Inez. She embraces him hungrily. She drops her dance bag in a chair, then pulls her top over her head and throws it aside. Bare-breasted, she lies back on the bed and raises one arm. The man takes her hand, then caresses the inside of her elbow. From a cupboard, he removes drug paraphernalia. Inez lies back on the bed, a length of surgical tubing tied around her arm. The man taps her arm to raise a vein, then injects her with the drug.
Yeah. When now? Okay. I'll be right back.
Inez lies on the bed, waiting for the high. Across the city, Alex lies on his bed, awakened by his neighbors. He gets up and switches on a lamp.
Stop it! Please, you're killing me!
My God.
Go on! Go on! Continue! I'd love to know how it comes to an end. Continue!
You pervert! Stop bothering us or I'll call the police!
Yes!
At the loft, Inez lies in a stupor. Outside, a shadow falls across the stairs. In a vision, a young boy runs toward the silhouette of a woman, past the carcasses hanging in a meat locker, then a woman's deathly white face. In the loft, a man's shadow falls across the drugs cupboard. He peers at Inez. In the vision, the boy still runs toward the woman. The white face is smeared with Vaseline. In the loft, the man has a syringe in his hand. Kneeling, He takes Inez's hand, then moves the needle toward her arm. Her eyes open. Naked, Inez falls into a pit of sand. In the meat locker, the woman embraces the boy. Inez's corpse lies in the sand pit. The next morning, Alex crosses the street toward an elevated train station. A bald Chinese man cleans the windows of his kiosk while a group of youths kick beer cans across the station.
Don't bother to order. Alex, I know exactly what you'll get. Dill pickle.
What makes you think that?
It's the only thing I got left.
Alex reaches into the kiosk and takes a can of beer.
Do you know what this reminds me of? I mean, you and I all alone in the middle of the night.
Broadway. The King and I.
The bald man doesn't get it.
What's about my lettuce leaf?
Oh, yeah.
The bald man hands a lettuce leaf to Alex, who tucks it into his breast pocket.
Still living together.
A black Chevrolet pulls to the curb. A man gets out, reaches into the back seat, pulls out a curvaceous, big-haired blonde. She kicks the car. The man shoves a finger under her chin.
Isn't love supposed to be beautiful?
That's not love. That's business. She's new in town. Real top-notch.
You're a scumbag, you know what?
Let me check this out.
Always on duty, right, Alex?
Just like you, Kojak.
As the car pulls away, Alex leaves the kiosk. He drains his beer, then tosses the can away. Outside a nightclub nearby, the blonde breaks free from the man.
Ow! Don't!
Go!
He drags her into the club.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, ciao.
Jerk.
The bouncer stops Alex.
What do you want, mister?
To dance.
This ain't an old folks home, man. Get lost, Grandpa.
My 12-year-old granddaughter is in your crap hole, selling coke by the kilo. If you don't move, I'll tear your ass to shreds.
He pushes past the bouncer.
Got a cigarette for me?
Sure. With or without filter?
Without filter.
I don't have any without filter.
So with filter?
I don't have any with filter either.
Then give me some change and I'll buy you a pack.
Tomorrow.
Alex sits at the bar, watching the blonde.
I hate the bitch.
Watching her fight back, Alex stands up and walks over. Rips the man's nose.
Now listen, Snowbunny. If you don't leave this chick alone, I'll tear your nose right off your face. And you can snort coke through your asshole.
Alex drags the man across the floor, then kicks him in the groin. The man falls to the floor. Alex stands over him.
And let me tell you, this wasn't an attack. Just self-defense.
The blonde grins happily as Alex walks towards her.
I'm afraid you did the wrong thing.
I've done the wrong thing all my life. But how could you know that? Hello.
He looks at her necklace.
Ah.
She looks at his pocket.
Lettuce?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to do a number on that guy.
Which one?
Over there.
The one with the blonde?
Yeah.
You have to go to the toilet.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Alex walks away. Two burly men step onto the dance floor. In the men's room, Alex pops a cigarette into his mouth. The blonde steps up close behind him.
I bailed you out this time, Superman.
He reaches back to fondle her buttocks, then turns and takes her in his arms. Alex tries to pull down her skirt, but it's a dress.
It works better if you pull up.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Backing her against the wall, he pulls her dress up to her waist. She reaches for his belt.
Oh, no, 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 no.
He backs away and struggles with the belt.
Are you sure you don't want some help?
No, 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 thank you.
Been a long time?
She backs Alex against the wall, undoes his belt buckle, and reaches into his pants. Later, at the cement plant beside the warehouse, Inez's corpse lies sprawled at the bottom of the sandpit. Her face is smeared with Vaseline. A camera records the crime scene. Walking grimly away from the body, Shirley stops before Alex and lays her head against his chest.
Are you sure you don't want to work in another department?
I'm going to write the report now.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
Is she a friend of yours?
She thinks I'm a therapist. Did she OD?
Heroin, maybe 8 hours ago. What's eerie is the Vaseline all over her face. When do you want my report?
You have 23 hours.
Why 23?
24 is what everyone says.
Yeah.
Alex walks toward the body.
Come on, Peter.
Okay.
Alex drops Inez's necklace into his hand. Back at headquarters.
Are you feeling any better?
Better would be better.
Get out of my office.
Where? Where do you want us to go?
Out. Come on.
As the team leaves, Alex picks up the phone.
Shut the door. Glass, got a minute, Kojic? Wait. I need some info on a certain Ines Werner. Huh? Ines Werner. When can you give me the scoop? Six is fine, thanks.
Pulling a note from his pocket, Alex wafts it under his nose. The name Lisa and a phone number are written on it. Lying back in his chair, Alex tips his hat over his eyes. Pulling Inez's necklace from his pocket, he dangles it before him, then closes his eyes.
One sheep. Two sheep. Three sheep. Yeah!
The report.
Thank you. Anything yet?
Aren't you interested in my work?
Sure, sure. Not right now.
Shirley takes back her report and strides out of his office.
Miss May!
Alex sits up.
Shirley, there's something I meant to tell you.
Try to remember this. We are not on some mission here. We are only doing a job. That's all.
She starts to leave.
Could you do me a favor? Go talk to the girl's parents. Maybe it will give us a lead. Please, with discretion and tact in proper portion.
No problem.
He sinks back into his chair.
Pick me up at 5:45.
What are you doing?
I am waiting till 5:45.
He opens one eye to peek at the door. Shirley peeks back. Alex chuckles silently. Later, in Shirley's white American convertible.
I spoke to Inez's parents. They had no idea their daughter was a junkie. She never spent any time at home. Her father's a blue-collar worker. Her mother works part-time. But she said Inez never asked her for money.
Why should she? She made 10 times your measly monthly salary, Shirley.
May I ask you a question? Has anyone ever tried to buy you?
Alex shakes his head. Shirley pulls to the curb.
Do you want a duplicate?
The only tip I could get was that she's been seeing this guy, Miskovsky. He trades in novelty jewelry. It's only a front for the drug scene.
This sort of thing?
He holds up Inez's necklace.
Yeah, possibly. In reality, he's a supplier for the hookers at the Belden Nui.
How do you spell Miskovsky?
Spell it? M, like mountain. I, like itchy. S, like sushi.
Brilliant. M, like mountain. I, like itchy. S, like sushi.
Alex steps over a railing at the curb, then climbs over the door into Shirley's convertible. Back at headquarters.
Miskovsky, Jack. He spent several months at a drug rehabilitation center with no results. He's been linked to the case of an 18-year-old who OD'd on heroin.
Just like Enos.
The boy shared an apartment with his girlfriend and Miskovsky. All three were junkies. For a while, the DA suspected a crime of passion because shortly after the boy's death, the girl became Miskovsky's lover. The girl later accused Miskovsky of having OD'd the boy. But the charges were dropped for lack of evidence.
Alex pulls Miskovsky's mugshot from the printer.
Do you have a roof for your car?
Even got reclining seats.
Alex's eyes widen and he grins. Outside the Belle de Nuit, Alex and Shirley sit in her convertible. Alex is blowing through the mouthpiece of his trumpet, while Shirley listens to a Walkman.
What catastrophe are you listening to this time?
A duet for Madame Butterfly. It's called I'm the Goddess of the Moon.
How fitting.
A car pulls into the club's parking lot. Shirley pokes Alex. He pokes her back. She points out the car. They watch as the driver gets out and climbs the stairway to the club. It's Miskovsky. Shirley offers Alex her revolver.
What's up? We're not here to hunt alligators. You better look so much better on you.
Do you really think so?
I think so. Just stay put in your car until I'm back. And promise me not to use your cannon, except in a real emergency, okay?
I never miss a target.
I know, kiddo.
Up the stairs to the Belle de Nuit. The woman in the doorway wears a black leather mask.
You are the goddess of the moon. Right.
Alex steps past her. Scantily clad women sit in their customers' laps. The club is a brothel. Alex takes a seat at the bar. Wrinkling his nose, he plucks a pair of blue satin panties from the bar and drops them to the floor.
Are you looking for company?
Good.
I see.
Alex does a double take at the sight of a white goat tethered to the bar.
Jeepers.
Alex squints at the glass, then looks at the bartender. The glass contains a quarter inch of whiskey.
It's a kind of short thing, isn't it?
The only thing tall in this establishment are the prices.
In that case, I'll have a glass of champagne and some chips.
We only have nuts.
I can see that.
The bartender's smile fades. Outside, Shirley gets out of her car. She walks across the parking lot toward Miskovsky's car. Glancing inside, she spots the keys in the ignition and smiles. Inside, Alex walks around the mezzanine that overlooks the lounge below. A couple of women in bras and panties solicit his attention, but he walks on past them. He stops to put his ear to a door, then continues on. He stops at another door.
All right, try it out.
Inside, the owner tastes Miskovsky's drugs.
Shit. I know. It's always shit. But they like shit. Come on, I need the money. I gotta go.
Curiosity killed the cat.
Alex turns to the bare-breasted whore, smiling at him. He nods in agreement, then kicks in the door. Miskovsky crashes through a glass door into the next room.
What the fuck's going on in here? Call the police!
Miskovsky leaps over the mezzanine railing.
Jump.
Next time.
Outside on the stairs...
Miskovsky, please!
Miskovsky stops. Reaching into his waistband, he spins around.
You freeze.
At the sight of the pistol, Alex raises his hands.
Don't try anything.
Miskovsky backs down the stairs.
That's good.
Pistol aimed at Alex, he moves to his car. From the shadows, Shirley aims at the drug dealer.
My keys. Shit!
Only in an emergency, Shirley.
Miskovsky spins around, and Shirley lowers her gun.
Good. Very good.
Miskovsky backs across the parking lot, keeping Alex and Shirley covered with his pistol. Then he darts to Shirley's convertible.
Shirley, the gun!
Shirley tosses her gun over to Alex. Just as he sights on Miskovsky, another car pulls into his line of fire. Lowering the gun, Alex angrily throws his hat to the ground.
Are you from the police?
Yeah.
I got the license plate number.
Thanks. It was mine.
Why don't you go home and send out for it? I've booked the place for a private party. Thank you.
He gently pushes the man back toward his car.
I got his keys.
Yeah. And left yours in the ignition.
Inside the brothel.
This is breaking and entering. Get off my property. I'll give you to the count of three.
Do you think you can manage that?
The bartender pulls a tiny automatic.
Have you ever heard of Clint Eastwood?
Shirley's big gun dwarfs the little automatic. The barman lowers it.
Thank God.
Can't we settle this peacefully?
Maybe you scratch my back. I'd scratch yours. Give me Miskovsky's address. Where? Oh, yeah. Miskovsky. Him like mountain.
At Miskovsky's.
At least we've got the needle. Check it out.
You won't find any drugs in this place.
I believe. You're wrong. You do something to your hair?
No. Nothing.
That's what I thought.
He walks over to the floor-to-ceiling window and gazes outside. Dragging on his cigarette, Alex looks up. Reaching over his head, he pulls down the blind. Currency and papers flutter down. Kneeling, Alex gathers baggies of drugs from the clutter.
Experience?
Just a coincidence.
Coincidence is fate in disguise.
Do you really want to discuss it?
Back at headquarters.
Anything new, Kunder?
We found Miss May's Buick. We're just taking it apart now.
Then you come up with something a little more intelligent. You can find me in my office.
You never said not to tell you, so I told you. You said it.
I said it all.
At least to myself.
Alex stands in his office before the photos of Inez and Miskovsky, which are taped to his window. Wreathed in cigarette smoke, he empties his pockets of the drugs, money, and papers found at Miskovsky's loft. At his desk, he glances at a money transfer.
Tim Carstens, 3,000. Commissioner Glass, District Attorney Carstens.
I'm got to talk to you.
I think this is important. Could you stop by my office later on? Great.
What's on my agenda for today? Cancel it.
Alex goes over the phone numbers in Miskovsky's address book with a highlighter.
Lisa. Find out who's got number 8914347.
In his car, Michael stares intently through the windshield on his way to meet Alex.
Where'd you get this? It's not my signature, but it's a good forgery.
The last three digits are 353.
Michael pulls out his wallet.
Could this be your daughter's handwriting?
It's missing.
Let's see. Monica Carstens. It's your own number, isn't it?
Yes. What is this?
Miskovsky's clients, including your daughter. That's why I needed to talk to you.
Who's Miskovsky?
A drug pusher. He had an affair with a certain Ines Werner. We found her yesterday. She OD'd. More than likely it was Miskovsky who gave her the last shot. I've got the syringe and both of their fingerprints are on it.
Michael studies the crime scene photos.
Ines Werner. My God. Monica knew her. Going to arrest him?
I came real close. We've got an APB on him.
Alex, I had no idea that Monica... drug addict.
Yeah. She forged your signature to get drugs, but... check for 3,000. How could she think for a minute you wouldn't find out?
Alex lights Michael's cigarette.
Maybe this Miss... whatever his name is.
Miskovsky.
Maybe he blackmailed her. Threatened to tell me about her drug habit. Monica involved with a killer.
I should talk to your daughter.
I'll call you as soon as she gets in. Alex. Well, thank you for being so upfront about this.
Sure. Don't worry about it.
Michael leaves.
Glass, can I pick up my car? I've got another call. Lisa Osterman, Birmi Ali 10. Thank you.
See you.
Later, Alex sits in his car outside an apartment tower, sipping beer and watching the scene in his rearview mirror. He turns to watch Lisa shoo two hookers away from her white BMW convertible. As Lisa pulls away, Alex puts his car in gear. At home, Michael, his wife, and Monica eat their dinner in silence. Michael's wife smokes as she eats her soup. Michael stares at Monica. She meets his eyes, then looks away. His wife goes to answer the phone.
I'm not here. Monica, we have to have a serious talk.
About what?
You know about what. Now, I don't want your mother upset.
How considerate of you. What about me? My friend Inez just died. And besides, I have something very important I need to talk to you about. Inez showed me.
Michael's wife returns.
The call was for you, Monica.
Why didn't you come and get me?
He said he was in a hurry.
I can really believe that.
He said he has something for you. He didn't even tell me his name. Who is he?
Yes, I'd like to know that too.
You're a lawyer. You figure it out.
Monica stalks away, leaving her parents at the table.
I heard some rather disturbing news about Monica today.
What is it?
At the warehouse, lights are burning in Miskovsky's loft. A taxi pulls up, and Monica gets out. Approaches Miskovsky. She digs into her purse and hands him money. He teases her by withholding an envelope from her, but she rips it from his hand, then stuffs it into her purse. A car waits outside the warehouse. Monica spots the driver.
What do you want?
In the vision, the boy runs into the woman's arms in the meat locker.
Weren't you saying anything?
Monica backs up against a stack of sewer pipes. A gloved hand grips her throat, and another covers her face with a photo of Inez's corpse. At a casino, Lisa throws a handful of cash on the table.
Could you break this down for me?
Red cheese.
I think I won that one.
And she gets up.
Another hand?
And walks across the room. Alex scans the room. Then spots her at the bar on the phone.
Hi, it's Lisa. No, I'm at the club. Listen, you wouldn't happen to have any snow, would you? Oh, shit. No, we are too. Skosky's disappeared. No, that's all right. Thanks.
Yes, the stuff was nothing.
She turns to face Alex.
Lisa. At least it was the right name.
I don't just give out my phone number to people I meet by chance.
Right, huh?
I'd have liked to have seen you again.
You're seeing me now?
Only by chance.
Don't you think it's more exciting that way?
Since there's a gambling club, that's the name of the game.
He moves closer.
Are you coming or going?
Maybe both.
He kisses her arm.
You wouldn't happen to have some, would you?
You mean
I guess we're all on the same boat.
It's getting a bit crowded. Let's hope it won't sink. Shall we go to your bed?
He kisses her arm again.
Only if you take off that hat.
He rips it from his head. At Lisa's apartment, they finish snorting coke.
Well, the best of the best.
Although, unfortunately, the last of the last.
Do you know where I can get some more?
What happened to your connection?
Ah, he has had an exciting past, but his future looks pretty mellow.
He takes her in his arms.
He got busted.
They dance.
My guy has just disappeared off the face of the earth. Knox will get him. Nobody could nail him down.
Alex cups her buttocks.
I know. I will.
Dropping to his knees, Alex pulls down her skirt.
Ooh, goose pimples. Ooh, goose pimples.
Goose pimples, yeah. Is that a good sign or a bad?
It's a warning. What did you say your name was?
Praise God, Bare Bones.
Nobody has named Praise God, Bare Bones.
For my whole life, that's a guy to do.
He throws her over his shoulder and carries her to the bedroom. Afterwards, Alex rips his shirt open, scattering buttons across the floor. Wearing star-spangled boxer shorts, he tiptoes out of the bedroom. Lisa lies sleeping. Alex enters another room. He opens a chest and looks inside. Opening a credenza, he reaches inside and extracts a piece of paper. It's a photo of Lisa and Miskovsky, written in lipstick on the back, with love, Lisa. Keeping the photo, Alex hurries from the room, then comes back to pick his pants up off the floor.
Lisa, it's Miskovsky. I need some money to split town. There's too much shit coming down. I'll call you tomorrow sometime. My studio's being watched.
Alex hurries out. The roads are wet as traffic speeds along the expressway. Parked at the curb, Michael checks his wristwatch. A city water truck drives by, washing the street, as Alex pulls up behind Michael's Mercedes.
You been? I've been looking all over for you.
I couldn't sleep. What's up?
Monica, she's disappeared.
Calm down, Monica. Let's go upstairs and you tell me about it. Come on.
I wanted to have a talk with her after dinner, but she's got a call from this Miss Cox.
How come you're so sure it was him?
Well, he said he had something for that. That could only be drugs. Anyway, my wife said he didn't leave his name. And Monica, she was upset because my wife didn't call her to the phone. And a few minutes later, she ran off. And then I told my wife about the check, and she was shocked.
They enter Alex's apartment.
And, a few hours later, Monica came back. And I was in my waiting up for her. You know, and my wife had gone to bed, and... Well, she knocked on my door, and that's something she never does. Alex, the poor girl was at her wit's end. She was crying. She broke down. She told me everything. It seems that Ines Berner wasn't the only one having an affair with Miskovsky. Monica was, too. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and what's more, Ines Werner caught the two of them in bed together. Yeah, well, she went absolutely crazy. It seems that this Miskovsky is the whole focal point of her life. She threatened to turn him in, and because she knows that I'm Monica's father, to make the deposition at my office. Well, that's when Miskovsky talked
Monica into helping him to silence Innes with a faked accident.
Doctor, into what?
Listen, this is what happened. I'd gone to pick up Monica, as usual, after the dance class, but instead of coming home, she wanted to be dropped off in town. You see, Innes Vernard had this appointment with Miskovsky for a fix. And of course, well, she was far too dangerous now. So the plan was that Monica would call Miskovsky there at the apartment and pretending to be another client so that he'd leave as soon as he'd given Innes her drugs. Well, but when he came back later, Innes was... Well, she was completely out of it. She was... So you were right. It was him that gave her the fatal dose. Alex, I'm telling you this in complete confidence. Please, I don't want Monica involved in this.
Go on, Michael.
Michael picks up his beer.
Well, I managed to quieten her down and get her to bed and without my wife hearing. And then, I tried to call you, but you were busy. Then when I tried to call you again, I picked up the phone and I heard Monica talking to Miskovsky. You know, they didn't notice I was listening in, and he told her to meet him right away, and before I had a chance to stop her, she was gone. Alex, I'm really afraid. I should have spent more time with her. But there was always this barrier between us, not being her real father, you see.
All we can do for now is wait, hope, let the investigation take its course. Michael.
He embraces his friend.
It's good to know you have a friend when you really need one.
In the morning, Alex dozes on the couch.
I'll be there in 20 minutes.
Sitting up, he rubs his eyes, then swallows the dregs of last night's beer. Soon after, Alex pulls up next to Shirley's car at the warehouse. At the cement plant next door, he walks past a hearse and a police van to Michael, sitting on a stack of tires, his head in his hands.
Michael, why don't you go home? I'll take care of this.
Michael nods.
Poor girl.
He stands to face Alex.
I haven't seen.
Then walks away, grief-stricken. As Alex wearily takes Michael's seat on the tires, Shirley, her hair neatly pulled back, walks over to him.
What's the M.O.?
Strangulation was the cause of death, but there's a knife wound in her stomach.
Shirley, I want you to go to Belmere Alley 10. When she leaves the building...
He shows her Lisa's photo.
Follow her. I'll be behind you, but I have to stay low because she knows me.
Do you notice anything different?
No.
As Shirley walks away, Alex wrinkles his nose and grins mischievously. Then he walks past the police van to look at Monica's body on the gurney. Later, he and Michael sit talking at a table overlooking the river. Outside her apartment building, Lisa gets into her BMW.
I've got her. She's driving a white Beamer convertible.
In his office, Alex grabs his hat and leaves. Shirley pulls away from the curb to follow Lisa out onto an expressway.
Towards Hotel Bellevue Tower.
I bet she is going to see Miss Kosky.
Take your walkie-talkie and follow her.
Get what floor is on, but no more. Remember, he's dangerous and knows you are a cop.
Shirley,
leave me your gun on the driver's seat.
Okay.
Thank you.
Inside the hotel, Lisa walks across the lobby to a bank of elevators. Shirley darts across the lobby to catch up and gets into the elevator with her. They travel up in silence. Lisa gets off at the 12th floor. Outside room 1212, she glances down the corridor. Shirley rides up one more floor. Checking that the corridor is clear, she turns on her walkie-talkie.
Alex.
Where the hell are you, Shirley?
On the 13th.
He opens her car.
Great choice. I hope it's not unlucky. Where'd she go?
To the 12th.
He takes her gun.
I'm on my way, stay put.
Miskovsky grabs Shirley and leads her away, holding a knife to her throat. Crossing the lobby, Alex pushes the button for an elevator. At the 13th floor, he steps off the elevator, gun at the ready. But there's no sign of Shirley. Alex glances back over his shoulder, then passes through a set of doors to the stairwell. He descends to the 12th floor. Crossing a balcony, he lets himself into the corridor. Glances around a corner, but it's just a maid. Miskovsky steps up behind him and clubs him senseless, then drags him out of sight and drops him to the floor.
What do you mean you know the guy?
We've met.
You've met? He's a cop! He'll show you his ass.
I've seen it. It's been bad.
Oh, that's great. That's terrific.
Can we just get out of here?
They slam a pair of garbage chutes closed.
All right, I got some business first. Come on. Come on!
All right!
The two cops are on the floor, naked and unconscious. Miskovsky and Lisa race to the car.
Come on, come on!
Upstairs, Alex comes too. He glances down at his naked body, then over at Shirley's. He notices the garbage chutes where their clothes were dumped. A housekeeper's cart stands in the corridor. Alex pulls a tablecloth. Minutes later, he and Shirley stand in the elevator, wrapped in the tablecloth, facing each other.
How could this happen to you?
How could my old life happen to me?
He pushes the door open.
Gentlemen first.
They shuffle awkwardly out of the elevator and sidle into the lobby to the amusement of a party of guests.
Why do you have this religious look in your eyes?
He glances down.
It's just a reflex. 1 minute I'm left by my wife, and suddenly I've got two.
They shuffle across the lobby. Carrying an attaché case, Miskovsky enters the airport transfer station of the subway. He looks over the railing to the platform below, then walks down the stairs. Glancing along the nearly empty platform, he takes a seat on a bench. A man enters the level above, looks around the platform, then heads for the stairs. Below, Miskovsky wears a grave expression on his face. The man descends the stairs, heading for Miskovsky. Michael sits down beside the drug dealer. They look at each other. Miskovsky slides his attaché case onto his lap, then taps it. Michael nods. Then he reaches into his coat and plunges a knife into the dealer's side. As Miskovsky slumps back on the bench, Michael wrenches the blade free and gets up, carrying the knife in one hand and the attaché case in the other. At headquarters.
May? Wait a second. Alex! They found Miskovsky.
She hands him the phone.
Glass. Colonel, don't let anybody know that Miskovsky's dead. Call the television. Tell them he is seriously injured, but alive. Got it, good. I'm on my way.
Murder has been murdered. At least now we have a decoy.
Later, at the subway.
Do you have any comment for our viewers?
There isn't that much I can say. The victim is an alleged murderer, George Miskovsky. He's seriously injured, but he pulls through. We'll be questioning about the stabbing tomorrow and expect him to give us important leads.
Alex and the medical examiner nod to each other.
Thank you. Thank you. So much for the cheese. Now let's wait for the rat.
As dusk falls, a Mercedes pulls into the cement plant beside the warehouse. Switching on the overhead light, Michael takes Miskovsky's attaché case from the seat and opens it. Tossing aside the money inside, he rummages through the contents, then pulls something from the compartment in the lid. It's a contact sheet of black and white photographs. He sets it aside. He reaches back into the compartment in the lid and pulls some 8x10 photos from the case. Black and white pictures of Michael and Inez naked on a bed. Suddenly, he crumples and tears up the photographs.
Come on, Miskovsky. Where are the negatives?
Emptying the case, he throws it out the window. Later, at home, he switches on the TV.
The victim is an alleged murderer, George Miskovsky.
He's seriously injured, but he'll pull through. We'll be questioning him about his telling tomorrow and expect him to give us important leads. Thank you.
Switching the TV off, Michael gets up. At the hospital...
Do exactly what a good cop wouldn't. As soon as you notice something suspicious, pretend you're asleep and let the events take their course.
Got it. Do you think he'll be able to find us?
He'll be smart.
He walks away, leaving Detective Kunder on a bench in the hallway.
University Medical Center.
In the lobby...
Oh, yes. Just one moment, please. Are you here or not?
Alex waves the nurse off and points outside.
Sorry, he just left. Well, I don't know if he'll be back later. Who's calling, please? Chief Inspector Conrad. Yes, that's...
Room number 3626.
Thank you. You've been most helpful. Have a good evening.
Good night.
Michael hangs up his car phone. Outside, Alex trots along a walkway toward another entrance to the hospital. Inside, he quickly mounts the stairs. Outside, Michael glances around the grounds, then moves toward the hospital. Inside, wearing a nurse's uniform, Shirley looks at her watch. Alex tiptoes into the corridor, then hurries over to Kunder, who lies asleep on the floor.
Hey, Paul! I only said pretend you were asleep.
You once said you were sure of dying in bed.
Sure as hell.
Is that why you are sleeping on the floor, huh?
Alex walks away with the man's gun. The detective crawls back onto the bench. Creeping up a stairwell, Michael unsheathes a boning knife. He slips the bare blade into his coat pocket and creeps out of the stairwell. Spotting Kunder asleep on the bench, he moves out into the corridor. His right hand still holding the knife in his pocket, he listens at the door of the room. Alex waits inside, gun at the ready. Glancing at the sleeping detective, Michael knocks softly. He enters the darkened room, and Alex retreats into the bathroom. As Michael edges toward the foot of the bed, the lights go on.
Don't move. It's me. Michael!
You're
like it. Yes.
Your timing sucks.
What? I heard the music. I came straight over.
Don't tell me you came to
question him. Yes. He murdered my daughter, you
know. Miskowski is dead.
Michael leans back against the wall, smiling with relief.
Oh. So, you're setting a trap for his killer?
Yeah.
Let's hope he falls for it and shows up.
Let's talk tomorrow, Michael.
He offers Michael his hand. Michael shakes it with his left hand. The next morning, one of Alex's legs sticks through the bathroom curtain. He throws the curtain open and crumples the beer can in his hand.
I doubt if he'll show up.
Why don't you go home and take Kunde with you? Thank you for everything.
She pulls him to his feet.
It was a perfect decoy. Why didn't it work?
It did.
You mean Karstens?
I told Mike myself Miskowski is dead. He went home without a worrying about. He knows he's safe now.
He tosses the beer can away.
But is that sufficient evidence for an arrest?
You wish.
So what now?
We'll have to set another trap. But first, let's go home and have a good night's sleep.
Later, in his apartment...
Lisa, this is Prescott Barebones. Actually, my name is Alex Glass. I am a police commissioner in Homicide. Our last meeting wasn't a chance encounter at all, I guess. I guess I made a real fool out of myself. I listened in on a call, so I know you had nothing to do with Smyskovsky. Except that you brought him money for his flight. I could keep you out of this, but I need your help. Actually, I'd love to chuck this shit and take off for New Orleans together. Together. Forget it, but let me know if you want to help me.
Alex sinks back across his bed, then sits up again.
Me. Please listen. I'd just like to see my daughter. Then at least ask her if her turtle. Uh-huh. She's got a new one.
He hangs the receiver on the footboard of the bed.
Michael.
He buries his head in a pillow.
Shit.
Later, at headquarters.
What happened to your phone? We tried to call you all morning. The line was constantly busy.
I was talking to Diana Prayer.
Shirley's come up with something on the computer.
Shirley shows Alex some pictures.
Don't tell me that's Enos Werner.
This is Enos Werner.
Get to the point. Who is the other?
Carson's sister, Caroline.
You mean Carson's other sister?
She died a few months after her 17th birthday. She was found dead in a refrigerated storage house. 3 months pregnant. Stabbed with a butcher knife. And here's the crime site. They never found out who did it.
I'm such an idiot. Exactly what the Vaseline on Enos' face reminded me of. I couldn't put my finger on it. The girl accused Smyskovsky of having OD'd the boy, but the charges were dropped for lack of evidence. Enos Werner's murderer must have tapped into our computer and seen this, so he made it look like it was Smyskovsky again. Michael. I feel sick. I think for lunch, I'll have a hot cup of Pepto-Bismol. Shit.
Outside the washroom, he butts his cigarette on a urinal, then heaves it at the wall. Grabbing boxes of fixtures and plumbing, he throws them around the hallway. Lisa leaves the elevator and walks into the lobby. She stands gazing up the stairs. Later, Alex plucks his daughter's turtle from his lap and hands it to Jimona at the rehab center. Lisa walks across the grounds toward the bench the two are sitting on. Leaving the little girl with her nurse, he stands to greet Lisa.
What are you doing here?
Call it chance.
Chance or coincidence. Mm-hmm. It's my fault that little girl got shot. Today was the first time I came to see her. I think she hates me.
Later, at a restaurant.
Is Smyskovsky dead? killed him.
Let me repeat my question. Do you want to help me?
What do I have to do?
Doc, was Miskovsky mixed up with anything else besides narcotics?
He was blackmailing some public figure with nude pictures of this guy with Inez Werner. Very hardcore stuff. He wanted big money for it. I tried to warn him. He thought as long as he had the negatives, he was safe. It's not much help, is it?
It is. It means Miskovsky's killer never got the negatives. I want you to make a call from your place.
And then what?
He flicks his nose with the rim of his glass.
And who may I say is calling?
Lisa, Mr. Miskovsky's partner.
Mm-hmm.
At Michael's office.
Yes?
It's Lisa, Mr. Miskovsky's partner.
Who? I don't know. But hold on.
Hello, Mr. Carstens?
Yes?
This is Miskovsky's partner, Lisa. I have some negatives that might interest you, but I can't go into details now.
I'll call you back. I bought it.
Alex picks up the phone.
District Attorney Carstens, please. I'll wait. Maggie, there's a new development. A son Lisa showed up, claimed she was Miskovsky's partner. Could you stop by my office? Okay, see you then. I've got to run. You stay here, I'll call you and ask for Mrs. Radman. You say, sorry, wrong number, split immediately. Here's the key to my apartment. Scarlet's Street 24. You'll be safe there. I'll call you later and fill you in on the rest.
Lisa removes his hat and kisses him lightly on the lips. He pulls her to him. Michael drives to his meeting with Alex.
Lisa, what about her?
She worked with Miskovsky. Lisa Ostermann. She called today real scared. She figures whoever killed Miskovsky is going to try to kill her. She wants to make a deal.
Michael studies a photo of Lisa.
The negatives they used in a blackmail scheme in exchange for reduced time.
Did you go for it?
Not yet. I wanted to run this by you first. I need the negatives to find out why Miskovsky was killed. Maybe the killer is the one they were blackmailing. I hate blackmailers.
So do I. So, Alex, what can I do for you?
He pours himself a coffee.
I don't trust this, Lisa. She's playing a double game.
I think she just wants us on her side to buy time to sell the negatives and then split.
She'll probably try to contact the killer by phone. If we put a tap on the line in the morning, we'll have the killer by night.
In the morning, fine. Oh, did you fill out the form? This apartment, does she actually live there?
Let's find out.
Hello?
May I talk to Mrs. Rassman?
I'm sorry, you have the wrong number.
That's her.
Michael grins. Then he signs the form authorizing the wiretap.
Alex? I think this time we're close.
I hope so. I'll let you know what happens.
Now you've got to get some rest.
Oh, yeah. When this is over. Michael, let's have a jam session. To clean my dirty soul.
Fine. Michael!
He holds out his hand. They grip each other's wrists and Alex hangs on tight. Michael tugs his hand free and the smile fades from Alex's face. Alex walks over to a window.
Let's go.
His team springs into action. That night, outside Lisa's apartment building, Michael gets out of his car. Alex and Shirley have him under surveillance from her car. As Michael walks toward the building, Alex gets out to follow him. Inside, Michael steps out of the stairwell. The blade of his knife flashes in the gloom as he jimmies the lock to Lisa's apartment. Inside, he stalks across the living room. Then stops to gaze around the apartment. He lowers himself into a leather armchair. It's the answering machine.
Commissioner Glass.
You tried to call my office to make an appointment. Following your instructions, I am now giving you a meeting place.
China Man's All Night Fast Food Stand on Scarlett Street. Let's say 9 p.m.
Don't forget the negatives.
In the phone booth, Alex hangs up. Michael rewinds the tape. Then he records a message.
Miss Osterman, this is Commissioner Glass's assistant. He has agreed to meet with you. But this is your last chance, however, to plead immunity.
Provided that you bring the negatives, you're to meet him at the municipal slaughterhouse.
Alex has had Lisa's line patched through to Shirley's car. Later, Alex's armed team watches the slaughterhouse.
Lisa, you can still pull out of this.
I think it's too late.
I see you perfectly.
Lisa's microphone is tucked inside her bodice. Alex smiles at Shirley.
You too.
She smiles back. The team stays out of sight as Michael pulls up to the slaughterhouse. Lisa steps out from behind a trailer and walks toward the car. Michael rolls down his window.
Hello. I'm Commissioner Glass's assistant. Did you bring the negatives?
My deal was to give them to the commissioner personally.
He gets out.
Who else knows about the beaches?
Nobody. I'm the only one.
He grabs Lisa and holds his knife to her throat. Then he marches her toward the slaughterhouse. Alex's team converges on the building. Inside, Michael turns on the lights, revealing rows of hanging beef carcasses. In his vision, Michael runs toward the woman at the end of the rows of carcasses. He changes into the young boy, then back to the man. In his vision, he and the woman embrace. He backs Lisa along the wall of the slaughterhouse at knife point and out onto the floor among the carcasses.
Where are the negatives?
And then nobody will see them. Really, I'll destroy them. Please, I did not get involved in this in the first place. Just let me go. I won't say anything. Really, I swear.
Give me the negatives.
I've seen those pictures. I've seen a lot worse. They don't even implicate you.
Alex is listening.
We charge for statutory rape.
But manslaughter. Slaughter.
Alex hurries toward the building. Michael plunges the knife into a beef carcass just inches from Lisa's body. Outside, Alex climbs a ladder running up the wall. Michael stabs the carcass, barely missing Lisa. Ah! His sister's face flashes through Michael's mind as he plunges the knife into the beef. Vaseline glistens on the dead girl's face. Now there's a glob of Vaseline in Michael's gloved hand. In his mind, the young prostitutes he saw with Alex recoil from him. He begins to smear the Vaseline on Lisa's cheek. Remembering Inez's sad face, he smiles ecstatically. Michael smears a glob of Vaseline into his own hair. As he caresses Lisa's cheek, he remembers caressing Monica's hair. Pressing up against Lisa, he continues to smear her face with his greasy glove. She looks him in the eye. Glancing down at Lisa's breasts, Michael notices the microphone protruding from her cleavage. He flicks it out with the point of his knife. Alex bursts through a window high in the wall to land lightly on his feet. Michael turns to face the policeman's gun.
Why don't you put the knife down, Michael?
I have to kill her, Alex. She's pregnant. By me, her brother. No one must find out. That's why I have to kill her.
She's not your sister, Michael.
Alex drops his gun.
She's my girl.
Michael turns to Lisa. Alex slowly walks toward his friend.
Look how beautiful she is now.
Suddenly, Michael grabs Alex and presses the knife to his neck.
What shall I do now, Alex?
I'm going to arrest you. Michael.
Michael releases the knife. He lays his head on Alex's shoulder.
Save your love for me.
Later, at the nightclub where they met,
don't give it up.
Alex and Lisa dance slowly in each other's arms.
It's the way it ought to be.
So, Alex, how could your wife leave a man like you?
So let me be the only.
All I know is I love you.
Shepherd is always the wolf.
I'll give you everything.
They nuzzle each other and their lips meet. Outside, they step into the sunlight.
You have your ID with you?
No, I threw it away along with the rest of my past.
I mean your passport.
He pulls something from his pocket.
2 one-way tickets to New Orleans.
When do we take off?
He glances at his watch.
In 45 minutes.
Down the street, Alex's team has their guns out. A car skids around the corner. It's the gunman from the hotel bust. A police car chases him beneath the elevated train.
Frankie, get moving.
They nearly collide with another car.
Take a pig.
They speed toward the roadblock Shirley and the others have set up. Alex spots what's happening.
Sonny!
She tosses him her pistol. As Alex takes aim, the car collides with the police car. The gunman leaps out, a shotgun in his hands. Looking down the muzzle of Alex's gun, he throws the shotgun away and raises his hands. Kunder races up to arrest him. Lisa runs to Alex, grinning proudly. With Lisa and Shirley smiling at his side, Alex tosses his hat in the air. version of Midnight Cop was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Bill Williams, narrated by Steve Coombs, and produced by Marco Sorin and Valerie Hunter. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Armin Mueller-Stahl as Alex, Morgan Fairchild as Lisa, Frank Stallone as Miskovsky, Julia Kent as Shirley, Monica Bleibtrau as Inez, Allegra Curtis as Monica, and Michael York as Michael. Screenplay by Julia Kent, Paul Nichols, and Peter Patzak. Music by Carl Carlton and Bertram Engel. Frank Leff, saxophone. Save Your Love, sung by Chris Thompson. Production design by Rainer Schopper, Olaf Scheifner, and Joaquin Schlabowski. Special effects, Harry Weisenheim. Costumes, Heidi Moline. Wardrobe, Brigitte Friedlander-Rodriguez and Ingrid Berman. Makeup, Hasso von Hugo and Sabine Gross. Edited by Michu Hutter, Gary Lane, and Susan Fortson. Mix, Milan Bohr. Sound, Detlef Fitchner and Andreas Walther. Assistant director, Anna Georgiades. Script, Vilma Predetto. Dialogue coach, Andrew Lucas. Photos, Wolfgang Janke and Jürgen Olschick. Production manager, Jürgen Kusatz. Executive producer, Dieter Nobe. World sales, Eigenhart Hillenbrand. Directed by Peter Patzak. Copyright 1988 by Lisa Roxy KS Film.